Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
All right, well, welcome. Welcome to the Learning Well podcast. I'm Miriam Taylor, and I'm here with Lana Jobson and Jerry Zanstra today. So by the time this podcast airs, it's going to be 2022, which is a little crazy. So,
are you sure that's right?
Yeah, pretty sure that's right. Okay. Pretty sure. And in some ways, that's not all bad. The further we get, I think, from 2020 isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yes, yes.
That would take a lot of absence for 2020.
Oh, man. Well, we're excited to kick off 2022 with episode 5. And New Year's is often a time for resolutions or maybe reflections. And in our industry, we always see these sort of projections, like learning trends for the upcoming year. Going back to 2020, I'm pretty sure any of those learning trends were way off. We do not aim to be predictive here. But, you know, we were talking kind of amongst ourselves as we were planning this podcast. And I think one of the things that sort of bubbled to the surface was rather than maybe doing learning trends that we see coming, or we thought maybe we should address learning trends that should be happening in 2022. Things that we see as really important, maybe they're not getting the due attention that they need in our industry, and maybe they are. But I think that's where we landed, learning trends that should be around for 2022. I don't have a fancy title for that. But that's what we thought we would focus on today. So I've actually asked Lana and Jerry to both share with us some learning trends that they're seeing that should be part of the discussion for 2022, and maybe what those are, where they're seeing that kind of thing done well, and maybe where we need to see some improvement in our industry. So Jerry, I'd love to hear your thoughts specifically, I know, on learning metrics, learning measurements, learning analytics, that kind of thing.
I don't think there's going to be much new under the sun. I think what's going to happen is there's going to be more of certain things. And things that had some importance before are going to have more importance. And I think one of the things for 2022 is going to be this idea of metrics and our ability to do analysis and us to actually be able to not only state what the return on investment is going to be for learning, but also predict a bit. Mm-hmm. So that predictability, not just looking backwards and saying, here's what happened and here's what it did, but also the ability to look forward and to say, if we do X, we suspect or we strongly believe that Y is going to happen. So the other reason why I think this is important is because budgets are going up.
Yes.
And in budgeting, I can tell you I've worked in a lot of different companies and in some government entities. And typically when you budget, you try to stay between 2% above or 2% below. And the reason why you do that is because you don't get any attention. It's called incremental budgeting. So if you budget higher than 2%, you're going to have a whole bunch of people looking at
scrutiny,
you.
Scrutiny,
yeah. A lot of scrutiny. If you're below 2%, they're going to say, well, if we could cut 2%,
that's
we
right.
can probably cut 5%. What we're seeing, and I'm sure many of you are seeing it as well, is a tremendous increase in the budget. Miriam, you and I have discussed a figure, I think, north of 50%.
Yeah, it was a LinkedIn study. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was north of 50.
So the amount of money that people are, organizations, for-profit and non-profit, and governmental entities are spending on training in light of COVID is going to increase in 2022 about 57% or so, I believe,
yeah,
was
the
number.
Number.
That is way outside of 2%. Mm. So you celebrate that because suddenly you have more tools in your toolbox. There are more things that you get to do. There are more projects. It's very fun. It's very exciting. But along with that is you're going to get a lot more attention from your CFO. Your CFO is going to say, okay, we wildly increased. The biggest probably increase we've ever done in learning is going to happen in 2022. We're going to be able to need, we're going to need to have some metrics that demonstrate that this actually worked and that we're actually moving the ball. So I don't know if this is predictive or a trend. I actually think that this is hardcore reality.
Yeah.
I think this is coming whether you want it or not, whether you prefer it or not. It seems to me that, of course, metrics and analytics have always been part of learning. And Miriam, you and I have talked about this in the conferences that we've been to. These are always standing room only, mm-hmm. Sessions when people are talking about ROI and so on. It's not new, but it's going to be more so. And I think the expectations are going to go up immensely. And the ability to actually develop those metrics, develop them correctly, measure what you want to measure, track the data that you need to track, and then put it together in a report and a dashboard, I think that's a key for 2022.
Yeah, and we've done some work on that already. And can you, Jerry, maybe just throw out, there's sort of the standard things we measure, but maybe three or four categories of things that maybe our listeners haven't thought about measuring. And these don't all come out of your LMS either. So no. And that's a whole another topic we where the data comes from. But what are some areas to measure that are important?
Because I'm pretty sure that some of our L&D professionals are like shaking in their boots right now. Like, how do we even do this so that we are comfortable and can say, bring on the scrutiny? I mean, we're not ready for that yet.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter if you're ready. I think it's coming.
Yes.
So I don't think you'll have an option on that. The tools, I mean, the basic tools are Kirkpatrick, right? When we build these out for companies, we start with Kirkpatrick's model, and it's logical. It makes sense. We add a level to the bottom because I think the first people you ought to be asking about learning is actually the team that built the learning. And the people that we work with say, well, our learning team is going to give themselves all A's. No, they're not.
Right.
They're going to know the difference, and you have to trust them that they're going to know when they have a high level of confidence, a medium level of confidence, and a low level of confidence, from the use of technology to did they have the tools available to them? Did they have the time? And so I think the first place to start is looking at the learning team. The second, obviously, is again, we're into Kirkpatrick, right, level one right now, which is, okay, how did the learner react? And then looking at what did the learner learn? All of those things can be measured through the LMS, they can be measured through surveys. Then you're moving up into higher order things like, did this actually change their behavior? Which is a much, much more challenging thing to determine, because you can have we all know people that have taken some, Miriam, you taught for years. Your students can pass the test and that didn't change one thing. I've been involved in education at a variety of different levels for, I don't know, close to 30 years. And being able to pass a test does not mean that behavior is going to change. So it's vitally important to manage, to measure the amount of behavioral change. That then can calculate into return on investment. So, Lana, now we can actually sit with a CEO or a CFO. A CFO is going to look at your report, and they're going to do the same thing we look at every time we see a proposal. You scan through the first pages and you go right to the bottom where the numbers are, right? How much is this going to cost?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what they're going to do. And you need to have it's not just defense, although there is a defense part of it, but it's also the ability to say, we did this and this was the result. This is beyond just how did they like the training or what did they learn or the learning experience. It's into, did it move the needle? And that's what's going to matter to the people who write the checks.
And really, that's what matters to the L&D team, too.
Sure.
We care that behavior changes. That's what we're trying to measure. That's part of our objectives. But like you said, sometimes we don't have the time really to go through or to do the entire analysis like we need to.
Mm-hmm. And that process needs to be greatly simplified. Mm-hmm. It needs to be both available and customizable so that you can produce a learning scorecard very, very quickly. And that should actually be an ongoing thing. There's no reason ever to not keep score. The question is how to do that.
Yeah. And what does that look like when it's done?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, thank you. I mean, that's a big trend that we have been, I'd say, involved in. And there's obviously, like you said, a growing understanding, lots more tools out there, I think, even than a few years ago that are available. But the real, I think, eye-opener for me was when I saw that study. And I think even 2 years ago, we had this inkling that if we could ride out the pandemic and, you know, we start to get phone calls and start to hear the panic, CFOs, you know, higher level C-suite leadership, understanding the need to make learning more accessible, more personalized, more, you know, just in time. We thought this budgetary increase was coming, but it's hard to say, right? Because there's all kinds of other financial pressures too. Right. So this is kind of like, we've seen the wave. And when I saw that study, that was kind of the, okay, we're here now.
Think of it like a spotlight. Most people at some point in their life think the spotlight would be a good thing. But if the spotlight shows up on you, you'd better perform.
Yeah.
And I think that's the trend that's coming. It's just that the spotlight is going to be a lot bigger and a lot brighter with a lot bigger budgets.
Mm-hmm. So it's really good news, but just a little bit terrifying, is what I'm hearing.
Just think of it as sports. I made the team. Is that good or bad?
Right.
Maybe
right.
I should have stayed at JV. So, yep.
All right. Well, thank you for those insights. And one of the things that comes along with then that those the measurement and the ROI, we call it ROL sometimes, where we're at too, but return on learning. There has to be, if there hasn't already been, a thinking outside the box or a better understanding of who our learners are and how we're going to reach them. Initially, we were all kind of in panic mode, you know, 2020. We like to call it a lot like emergency learning, that kind of thing. My fear always was is that we create this emergency learning. It's great for what it needed to be. We had to get it done. But the last thing we wanted was for that to sort of become the norm or for that to become recognized as here's the standard for e-learning or here's the standard for any kind of digital learning. Because it wasn't. It's just emergency learning. It's not best practices. It didn't have a lot of learning science. The main objective was to get it done fast, and that's what had to happen at the time. But we are seeing now, I think, a better understanding and appreciation, especially, I think, because of social isolation, which we'll talk about more in a few minutes, but a desire for more personalized approaches in this learning. One size does not fit all, and learning is not a one-time experience. So, Lana, I've asked you to address that in multiple ways. I think you have several trends that you're going to address. They're all kind of intertwined. So if you could just give us some of your thoughts on personalized learning and, you know, mobile and just all how all those things fit together.
Yeah, personalized learning is definitely going to be a hot topic in 2022. As we continue to become more learner-centric and really focus on the needs of the learner. And so what does personalized learning mean? We're looking at learning that is customized. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. We want learning to be based on the learner's needs, whether they're geographically isolated, they have different experiences, they have maybe a different preference on whether it's laptop or tablet or mobile. So there's a lot of ways that we can customize learning to the learner to make it the best experience that we can.
Well, I think I know, Lana, recently I just sat in and spent some time where we've been working on one specific project where beyond sort of our typical learner kind of analysis, we really, really dug deep into the audience, the culture of the company. There were quite a few categories of things that we dug into. And again, this is a larger initiative. Mm-hmm. But can you maybe tell me just a few of those topics? So I know our audience, we're familiar with the learner, with the learning persona, that sort of thing. But maybe expand their thinking a little bit about what goes into that with the learner.
Well, we've talked before, Miriam, about how many learners really prefer mobile now, if that is possible. Not all learning situations should happen on mobile, but it definitely needs to be in the forefront of our minds as we're creating. Because with our phones, our smartphones, over 90% of the time, we're actually on apps. Mm-hmm. So it's not just mobile for mobile. It's we need to be considering creating apps for our learning situations because that's what our learners are used to and that's what they're expecting. And anything from compliance to self-directed learning to especially just in time. Mm-hmm. Those are all really good reasons or applications for deploying to our smartphones. This will kind of merges into another topic that I think is going to be critical in 2022. And that is how are all of these learning experiences deployed and what platforms are we using? We are all familiar, I assume, with a learning experience platform or an LXP. And this is the platform that is kind of expanding the capability of what our normal LMSs have traditionally been able to do. We recognize that many of our learning experience, we're learning all the time.
Right.
And so it's not just you sit down, you take a formalized course and you check that off your list and you're done. Learning can happen anywhere. It can happen on the floor. It can happen when we're at home, snuggled up on our couch, flipping mm-hmm. through our phones and catching up on an article that maybe a colleague wrote. So just being able to track and get credit for and watch our learners' habits of how they're learning outside of the LMS
right.
has been really, really helpful. And I only see that as improving and continuing. And one of the things that I think is super cool is some of the LXPs even have a chat box mm-hmm. where it's 24/7. You have a question about your learning experience and it's there ready for you. So that's a very cool trend.
It's more communal.
It is more communal.
Yeah.
So is part of the difference between just, to help our listeners differentiate between like an LMS and an LXP, the LXP then to clarify is more easily accessible. There aren't maybe as many barriers to get at the content that I need. And does it allow me, because there is a blurring of lines, I'd say, in the industry too. Like LMS companies, if they're smart, and they are, they're pulling a lot of these kinds of experiences into the LMS too. So there is a bit of the blurring of the line depending on what specific one you're using. But what is the main difference with the LXP? Is it just the ability to pull in different kinds of content into it, or is it accessibility? Or
it definitely has a different look and feel typically. Okay. It is tracking those informal learning experiences that the learner can self-record.
Oh, okay.
But there's also an increase in AI.
Yep.
And that's where, a lot of the magic is happening mm-hmm. is that the AI can track what the learner has done in the past and even suggest some learnings, can even aggregate some learning from just the web. So mm-hmm. the curating content for a learner that would be personalized just for them. So that's very cool. So yeah, the learning experience platforms have definitely increased capability over what we see generally in LMSs. Okay. And it's really driving that personalized learning mm-hmm. experience. Yeah. But here's one more futuristic. So LXPs we're probably familiar with, but what I'm asking you and both of you, why is it that our human resource information systems yeah. is a mm-hmm. different system completely and our learning management system? Like, what sense in what world does that make? I think it just, they evolved separately mm-hmm. and they've just, for whatever reason, no good reason I can think of, have stayed separate. But I think one of the things that should be happening is if these two systems can begin to merge so that the experiences that you've had, your educational background, your current role, your career aspirations, I mean, just think of that. If it was all in one spot and really targeted to you, I don't know. What do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I love that. That is a huge trend that we're seeing right now, too. So,
someone will figure that out.
Well, and it's being done.
It's starting to be done. Yeah. Yeah.
There's some either integration or some tools that really provide both because, hopefully it doesn't happen, but I'm certain it does, where you kind of go in for your end of the year yearly evaluation and as much as your boss wants to be, like, they can't know everything. And so you might have been working on things, like you said, on your couch, really working to get ahead, whatever. If none of that's tracked, it's really up to you to sort of bring that to the forefront. And maybe you're, wanting a promotion and how do you prove that? But if all that kind of thing is at their fingertips mm-hmm. and easily aggregated, We look at obviously a lot of characteristics when you consider someone for a promotion, but if you can easily pull up, see the things they've been a part of, what they've been learning and how they've been doing in those things, that's a big piece of it that hasn't been there in the past.
That's back to the learning scorecard. Mm-hmm. Because the HR systems can tell how someone is doing, but it can't tell why. Mm-hmm. And so if you could answer the why question, and over time you can see trend lines, when we do this, people tend to improve. They tend to do their jobs better. They tend to stay longer. They tend to, see more opportunity in the future. If you can get to that stage, that's a powerful tool. To know what happened is one thing, to know why it happened. And then, again, predictive, if we do more of something, we're going to get more of something. Those are really powerful tools.
I'm hearing maybe that we need to add another learning science, Miriam. I'm wondering, Jerry, if we need to add a data scientist to our team as well.
Oh, for sure.
There does, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
As we get more complex. And so the last thing that I'm going to point out for the trends that should be there in 2022, and that is, as we have all of these different kinds of learning experiences and our platforms are growing and becoming more complex, maybe this is my practical side again, but just a plug to, we do have to put some thought into keeping all of that structured, because there's nothing worse than remembering, oh, I remember I saw that somewhere and now I can't find it. And occasionally we get to look in the back end of clients' LMSs or LXPs, and it feels kind of like looking in someone's sock drawer. It's a little bit awkward, but you can definitely tell if the person or people, the team that's in charge of that, are organized, and that makes a huge difference in the learner experience, because you can have all these great learning experiences and can't find them.
So many companies did the wiki thing for a while, right? Mm-hmm. This repository of all sorts of stuff, and it's like walking into a library. Yes, there's great information in this building, but I don't know where to find what I need.
Yeah.
And so people would get wiki, systems in their own companies, and within a year or two that no one was looking at it because it was not user-friendly at the end of the day.
It creates frustration instead of alleviating. So these have been great personalized learning. So, Miriam, I know that another thing that you are passionate about, and this has been a great segue to cue you up, is that not only how do we learn individually, but how do we learn in a social setting? What about social learning in 2022?
Yeah, I think maybe it's less of a trend and more of a pendulum swing, right? So, I don't know. I hesitate to give away how many years ago it's been, but when online learning, e-learning, whatever we want to call it, was seen as sort of the great panacea. I still remember thinking, the student isn't going to pay attention in my classroom. Not for lack of trying. I was clearly scintillating, but what's going to make them pay attention staring at a screen? And we, especially I think K-12, was on kind of the cutting edge of that, because we saw that real quick. Humans are social creatures. And so historically, that initial move to online learning, it kind of ignored that. And, or I would say even at a minimum, maybe even when we weren't ignoring it, the technology wasn't quite there to make it everything it needed to be. So, I spent an early part of my career helping teachers use or faculty use whatever kinds of tools, like the wikis you talked about, like chats, like discussion threads. Now, I still am a firm believer, if you do it right and you are actively involved, which is again, social, you can run a great discussion thread, but we've all been a part of horrible ones. So faculty posts a question, everybody gives the same answer because there's only one right answer, and the discussion is now dead. So I think early on, even though maybe there was a small recognition that we did need that collaboration still, the technology wasn't quite there. But I would say since the pandemic, I think it has greatly both accelerated the need, the knowledge that we have to have it, but also really like this desire. People are feeling socially isolated. And in the past, we could always fall back. We're going to do these things online. But then, of course, we're going to have like a session together, an ILT session or, classroom session, whatever we called it. And that's where we're going to get at kind of those social aspects of it. And then all that was stripped away. Mm-hmm. And so I think what's really becoming, again, I don't want to say a trend, but I think we've really recognized in the pandemic is that need to be human. So I actually just saw today the study from the Ken Blanchard companies, and they did it in October of this year. So not obviously really recent. One of the trends they saw is they surveyed companies was, you know, their respondents saying there's like a weakening of interpersonal connections. People feel less social cohesion, like they're not on a team, even when they are on a team. And one of their takeaways was that this should be really important to L&D teams because, again, we're human and like we learn from each other. So, yeah, I would say I think it's maybe a trend for this year, but only in that I think it's really putting the re-emphasis on something that should always have been there. And the pandemic has just really highlighted that beyond just like any learning program, though. We could look at any learning program, any series of courses and say, yes, let's build in social interaction. Let's build in chats. Let's build in like a virtual sessions where we can talk back and forth. What's cool to me is I see an opportunity here for an L&D team. I see this opportunity for them to take the lead in the company for creating remote social situations. So not just associated with the program Lana's working on, trying to get up and running, you know, some leadership program or this compliance program. We can do that. But taking the lead across the company, because we understand how people think, right? Like that psychology. Mm-hmm. We understand how they interact, that sociology, like all those learning science pieces. Here's an opportunity for our L&D team to step forward and say, we need to create social interaction across the company outside of any specific program. Whether it's, we've seen a huge uptick in tools like Slack or other, again, this is not an endorsement, but tools like that where people can interact socially. We have all kinds of Slack channels for different reasons across our company. I mean, if you think, again, I guess I just say like, for me, this is a plug or an opportunity I don't want L&D teams to miss. Mm-hmm. They have increased budget. They have increased eyes on them. And increased opportunity for influence. So let's create some social experiences outside of any program, though, that could help people feel connected cross teams, cross disciplines, cross functions, that allow people to interact and have those conversations. And ultimately, they're learning from each other then.
And it definitely has to be an intentional item that we're putting forth the effort, we're mapping out the time, the place, and how it's going to happen. Because, as you said, those spontaneous opportunities really have decreased greatly. So it's not like you can have those chat times in between your projects, just at the water cooler or whatever.
Planned spontaneity.
Yes, yeah. Plans. So
I think that we're going to have to be more intentional. And yeah, who better than the L&D team to pull that off? I agree.
Right. And I think sometimes that planned spontaneity then gives way to additional spontaneous, truly spontaneous activities growing out of that. But it's something that has to be created for sure. So yeah, that's a bit of my soapbox. But I just think about how many learning opportunities were maybe missed over the past couple of years. Because Bandura, so he's kind of, I don't know, the name behind social learning, even though I think like we all know we learn socially, his principles, observation, imitation, and modeling. Like how much have we missed because we're not sitting next to somebody anymore, hearing that passing conversation. And so again, it's just, I'm on my soapbox, but it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. Let's create those so that we can kind of get back to doing some of those social things together.
Our whole society has to figure this out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it isn't just learning. It's how our society interacts with itself. And the metaverse is a fascinating concept. I'm still getting my head around it. There are things that are really interesting about it, and there are some things that are really unsettling about it. Because I mean, we live in a world where every bit of information is available to us, if for most people, many people around the world, instantly. And so you can learn what you want to learn. I mean, it's not that it's not out there. It's starting to call into question things like university education, right? There's people that are talking about, is this is just an antiquated system? But even, you know, the upcoming people that are going to be working for many of us in the next 10 to 15 years, they are going to grow up in a scenario where the metaverse feels very normal. And they're going to lack an immense amount of social interaction. So if we don't want to look at 2022, we want to look at, you know, 2032. We will be, given where things are going, I think, in a very different situation. So the technology is wonderful. It's great. It's powerful. But there are other things to be said. And there are other things to be decided. And that social interaction piece inside of learning and development and learning experiences is going to be profoundly important. But we won't be the only ones trying to figure that out. Everybody's going to. Parents are going to be trying to figure that out. Schools.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's for sure something we're passionate about here at InnoVersity because we believe people are created to be social. So it's definitely... And it's a little bit of a wild west right now. Like I said, there's a bit of a, a lot of pendulum swings kind of back and forth in those things. So there's a lot of, like you said, sort of deep philosophical questions we have to think through as well.
The ethics, the ethics always come after the innovation. And it would be a shame if we weren't out in front of the ethics and the moral questions that are really important about social need. And social interaction.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we could spend forever talking about that. There's one other trend here. Actually, we have a couple, but I'd be remiss. Obviously, we don't want to walk away from here without talking about immersive learning, whether that's AR, VR, MX, MR, all those things. But we also have a entire podcast coming with some experts. So we're not going to belabor this, but Jerry, I wonder if you could give me kind of just one sort of overarching statement about where you see this in 2022, at least.
Yeah. Again, this is nothing new, right? If we went back and we were doing this podcast 5 years ago, we'd still be talking about immersive learning. We'd be talking about AR, VR. The trends are the tools are getting better and they're getting better faster. So the technology is increasing. The other thing, the economics of it are coming into line where it's open and available to a lot more people. Watch what Apple does this year. You know, Apple's huge push is going to be in AR and VR. Microsoft's huge push. So now we have this technology, and it is getting better, and it's getting cheaper, and that means a lot of us are going to use it. The question is, how will we use it? Will we use it because simply because it's a tool and we're going to do it? Will we do it based on solid instructional design and learning science? Or will we just make the next cool thing? So the technology, again, is out in front of our learning science. And many people, I'm sure some people on this podcast have been thinking about this for a long time. But we need to get our heads around what this is going to mean. So I'm thinking we're going to be talking a lot about immersive learning. It's wonderful, but you still end up with the social question. You end up with some weird metaverse. You know, philosophical questions. The technology is there. The question is, what are we going to do with it? I think this is the year.
Yeah, I agree.
Where immersive learning becomes common.
Yeah, so we'll have to figure out even processes of how do we storyboard for immersive learning and what does development look like in our timelines? I mean, like the down to the nitty gritty. I mean, everything from the philosophical to what am I doing today to roll this out?
So. Yep.
Yeah.
Much to be learned.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and like I mentioned, we will have some experts too on in a few months, I think, just talking maybe through technically, but also kind of the possibilities to help expand our listeners' thinking on that. So we're talking about all these trends, and you know, Lana, you and I were talking about this. We've seen this term out there. Whether or not it sticks around, whether or not it applies, it puts a bit of a bow on the conversation that we're having. And what we've seen is this term next gen learning, which again, next gen, it gets applied to, I don't know, I'm pretty sure when my Grandpa had the first crank phonograph. Maybe that was even before his time. That was probably next gen learning.
Right.
For sure. Yeah, but what it's being used today really is to reach that. And when we say next gen, we're not really talking like demographically younger learners per se. It's really the next generation of learning in general. And so we talk about putting the learner at the center, personalized paths. It's immersive. It's agile. It's available across all kinds of platforms. It's measurable. And what do you know? That pretty much sums up what we were talking about today. But Lana, what were you seeing when you were kind of looking at that term next gen, just as it applies to what we're talking about today?
Yeah, I guess I'm not a great fan of the term itself. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of what the term promotes.
Absolutely.
And that is being able as a learning experience designer to pick and choose, to know your learners so well and the content so well, and you be able to have the freedom to pull in, you know, this animation to reinforce this point, maybe to motivate, pull in this immersive learning, maybe some VR to get them right there practicing. So it's the concept is you are able to pick and choose from a huge toolbox and be able to create a truly custom and unique learning experience.
Yeah, I mean, it as we adapt these strategies, really what we're talking about is just this huge toolbox of both strategies and tools that help us personalize experience, move us towards delivering them really mobile or any way we want, like whatever that next thing is. We're curating some of that content. Like to your point, Jerry, there's so much out there. How do we help curate that? And then we're tracking it and we're using that data to be predictive, to promote a better learning journey. I mean, that's where we're headed this year. And whatever term we use.
It's all great. Yeah. As long as we don't lose first principles.
Yes.
And first principles on what is the human person, and what is brain science and sociology and psychology and consumer behavior and all the other things that make up learning science. The technology sometimes can eat the actual experience. And we're going to always have to come back to first principles of what is a person and how best does that person learn.
Here's all these
cool things, right? I don't want to deny there's lots of cool things coming, but we have to stay back on that. So you're grounded in those things.
Yeah, we've definitely seen the some of those repercussions of creating a wonderful game. And then when you're all done, you think, okay, what were they learning? Because the game just took over and the learning kind of got left in the dust. And they had a great time playing, but the learning was left outside. Yeah, that's a really good message to promote. I just love that we have so many tools things available. Miriam knows that I don't have a favorite color.
Nope.
So it always makes me a little uncomfortable when people ask me, you know, or you have to write or fill a survey. I mean, it just seems to come up. What is our deal color? But I finally, like, as an
it's
adult.
It's a personality test.
That what it is? And I failed.
And you are failing, yes.
Failing. Mm-hmm. So I finally got a response. It's like, why would I limit myself to one color? I want to use the whole box of crayons. So that's kind of how I feel with this next gen. Learning is let's go. Let's use the whole box of crayons.
I totally agree with you. I do have a favorite color, full disclosure, but I like 1,000 kinds of music. So I'm with you. I think we all are that way wired a little bit. But well, I thank you both for your thoughts, for forcing us to think both philosophically and practically. And just as we look at the new year, it's a great place, I think, to kind of ground our thinking before we move forward. I want to thank again, our listeners. We know your time is precious. We know it's a gift. We thank you for listening. And as always, download, like, share, whatever it is that you you do on the podcast tool you're listening to, make sure you do that. Thank you.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.